She exclaims, "But you should have known. I told you. I remember very clearly telling you on Thursday morning." And there's no doubt at all about that. She did tell me. She tells me everything in certain areas. This morning, I not only didn't listen, I wanted to get away from it. Maybe I wanted to talk myself and didn't have anything to say, because, to give her fair due, she doesn't listen to me either, and a good thing sometimes. She listens to tones and intonations, and from them gathers her facts about health and how my mood is and am I tired or gay. And that's as good a way as any. Now that I think of it, she doesn't listen to me because I'm not talking to her, but to some dark listener within myself. And she doesn't really talk to me either. Of course, when the children or some other hell-raising crisis are concerned, all that changes. I've thought so often how telling changes with the nature of the listener. Much of my talk is addressed to people who are dead, like my little Plymouth Rock Aunt Deborah or old Captain. I find myself arguing with them. I remember once in weary, dusty combat, I called out to old Captain, "Do I have to?" And he replied very clearly, "Course you do, and don't whisper." He didn't argue. Never did. Just said I must, and so I did. Nothing mysterious or mystic about that. It's asking for advice or an excuse from the inner part of you that is formed and certain. For pure telling, which is another way of saying asking, my mute and articulate canned and bottled goods in the grocery serve very well. So does any passing animal or bird. They don't argue, and they don't repeat. Mary said, "You're not going already. Why, you have half an hour. That's what comes of getting up so early." "Whole flock of crates to open," I said. "Things to put on the shelves before I open. Great decisions. Should pickles and tomatoes go on the same shelf? Do canned apricots quarrel with peaches? You know how important color relations are on a dress." "You'd make a joke about anything," Mary said. "But I'm glad. It's better than grumping. So many men grump." And I was early. Red Baker wasn't out yet. You can set your watch by that dog, or any dog. He'd start his stately tour in exactly half an hour. And Joey Morphy didn't show. The bank wouldn't be open for business, but that didn't mean Joey wouldn't be there working on the books. The town was very quiet, but of course a lot of people had gone away for the Easter weekend. That and the 4th of July and Labor Day are the biggest holidays. People go away even when they don't want to. I believe even the sparrows on Elm Street were away. I did see Stonewall Jackson Smith on duty. He was just coming from a cup of coffee in the Foremaster coffee shop. He was so lean and brittle that his pistols and handcuffs seemed outsize. He wears his officer's cap at an angle, jaunty, and picks his teeth with a sharpened goose quill. "Big business, Stoney. Long, hard day making money." "Huh?" he said. "Nobody's in town." What he meant was that he wished he weren't. "Any murders, Stoney, or other grisly delights?" "It's pretty quiet," he said. "Some kids wrecked a car at the bridge. But hell, it was their own car. Judge'll make 'em pay for repairing the bridge. You heard about the bank job at Floodhampton?" "No." "Not even on television?" "We don't have one yet." "Did they get much?" $13,000, they say. Yesterday, just before closing. Three fellows. Four state alarm. Willie's out on the highway now, bitching his head off." "He gets plenty of sleep." "I know, but I don't. I was out all night." "Think they'll catch him?" "Oh, I guess so. If it's money, they usually do. Insurance companies keep nagging, never let up. It'd be nice work if they didn't catch you." "Sure would," he said. "Stoney, I wish you'd look in on Danny Taylor. He looks awful sick." "Just a question of time," Stoney said. "But I'll go by. It's a shame. Nice fella. Nice family. It kills me. I like him.
Well, you can't do nothing with him. It's gonna rain, Heath. Willie hates to get wet.
For the first time in my memory, I went into the alley with pleasure and opened the back door with excitement. The cat was by the door, waiting. I can't remember a morning when that lean and efficient cat hasn't been waiting to try and get in the back door, and I've never failed to throw a stick at him or run him off. To the best of my knowledge, he's never got in. I call the cat he because his ears are torn up from fighting. Are cats strange animals, or do they so resemble us that we find them curious as we do monkeys? Perhaps 600 or 800 times that cat has tried to get in, and he's never made it. "You're due for a cruel surprise," I told the cat. He was sitting in a circle of his tail, and the tip flicked up between his front feet. I went into the dark store, took a can of milk from the shelf, punched it open, and squirted it into a cup. Then I carried the cup into the storeroom and set it just inside and left the door open. He watched me gravely, looked at the milk, and then walked away and slid over the fence in the back of the bank. I was watching him go when Joey Morphy came into the alley with the key to the bank's back door ready in his hand. He looked seedy, grainy, as though he hadn't been to bed.
"Hi, Mr. Hawley.
I thought you were closed today."
"Looks like I never close. $36 mistake in the books. I worked till midnight last night."
"Short?"
"No, over."
"That should be good."
"Well, it ain't. I gotta find it."
"Are banks that honest?"
"Banks are. It's only some men that aren't. If I'm gonna get any holiday, I gotta find it."
"Wish I knew something about business."
"I can tell you all I know in one sentence. Money gets money."
"That doesn't do me much good."
"Me either. But I can sure give advice."
"Like what?"
"Like never take the first offer, and like if somebody wants to sell, he's got a reason, and like a thing's only as valuable as who wants it."
"That's the quick course?"
"That's it. But it don't mean nothing without the first."
"Money gets money?"
"That cuts a lot of us out."
"Don't some people borrow?"
"Yeah, but you have to have credit, and that's a kind of money."
"Guess I better stick to groceries."
"Looks like. Hear about the Floodhampton Bank?"
"Stoney told me."
"Funny, we were just talking about it yesterday, remember? I've got a friend there, 3 guys. One talked with an accent, one with a limp. 3 guys. Sure, they'll get 'em.
Maybe a week, maybe 2.
"Tough." "Oh, I don't know. They aren't smart. There's a law against not being smart."
"I'm sorry about yesterday."
"Forget it. I talk too much. That's another rule. Don't talk. I'll never learn that." "Say, you look good."
"I shouldn't. Didn't get much sleep."
"Somebody sick?"
"No. Just one of those nights."
"Don't I know."
I swept out the store and raised the shades, and didn't know I was doing it or hating it. Joey's rules popped around and around in my head, and I discussed matters with friends on the shelves, perhaps aloud, perhaps not. I don't know. "Dear associates," I said, "if it's that simple, why don't more people do it? Why does nearly everyone make the same mistakes over and over? Is there always something forgotten? Maybe the real basic weakness might be some form of kindness. Marullo says money has no heart. Wouldn't it be true, then, that any kindness in a money man would be a weakness? How do you get nice, ordinary Joes to slaughter people in a war? Well, it helps if the enemy looks different or talks different. But then how about a civil war? Well, the Yanks ate babies, and the Rebs starved prisoners. That helps. I'll get around to you, sliced beets and tinned button mushrooms, in a moment. I know you want to talk to me about you. Everybody does. But I'm on the verge of it. Point of reference, that's it. If the laws of thinking are the laws of things, then morals are relative, too. And manner and sin
That's relative, too, in a relative universe. Has to be. No getting away from it. Point of reference. You dry cereal with the Mickey Mouse mask on the box and a ventriloquism gadget for the label and 10 cents? I'll have to take you home. But right now, you sit up and listen. What I told dear Mary as a joke is true. My ancestors, those highly revered ship owners and captains, surely had commissions to raid commerce in the Revolution, and again in 1812. Very patriotic and virtuous. But to the British, they were pirates. And what they took, they kept. That's how the family fortune started, that was lost by my father. That's where the money that makes money came from. We can be proud of it. I brought in a carton of tomato paste, slashed it open and stacked the charming, slender little cans on their depleted shelf. Maybe you don't know because you're kind of foreigners. Money not only has no heart, but no honor, nor any memory. Money is respectable automatically if you keep it a while. You must not think I'm denouncing money. I admire it very much. Gentlemen, may I introduce some newcomers to our community? Let's see. I'll put them here, beside you ketchup. Make these bread-and-butter pickles welcome in their new home. New Yorkers, born and sliced and bottled. I was discussing money with my friends here. One of your finest families. Oh, you'd know the name. Everybody in the world does, I guess. Well, they got their big start selling beef to the British, when our country was at war with the British. And their money is as admired as any, and so is the family. And another dynasty, probably the greatest bankers of them all, the founder bought 300 rifles from the army. The army had rejected them as dangerously defective, and so he got them very cheap, maybe 50 cents apiece. Pretty soon, General Fremont was ready to start his heroic trek to the West, and he bought the rifles, sight unseen, for $20 apiece. No one ever heard whether they blew up in the troopers' hands. And that was the money that makes money. It doesn't matter how you get it, just as long as you get it, and use it to make more. I'm not being cynical. Our lord and master, Marullo of the ancient Roman name, is quite right. Where money is concerned, the ordinary rules of conduct take a holiday. Why do I talk to groceries? Perhaps because you are discreet. You do not repeat my words or gossip. Money is a crass and ungracious subject only when you have it. The poor find it fascinating. But don't you agree that if one becomes actively interested in money, he should know something of its nature and character and tendencies? I'm afraid that very few men, and they, great artists or misers, are interested in money for itself. And you can kick out those misers who are conditioned by fear. By now there was a large pile of empty cartons on the floor. I carried them to the storeroom to be trimmed and kept. Lots of people carry supplies home in them, and, as Marullo would say, it saves bags, kid. There's that kid again. I don't mind it anymore. I want him to call me kid, even to think of me as kid. While I was stacking the cartons, there came a battering on the front door. I looked at my big old silver railroad watch. And do you know, for the first time in my life, I had not opened on the moment of 9. Here it was plainly 9:15. All that discussion with the groceries had thrown me. Through the glass and iron screen of the door, I could see that it was Margie Young Hunt. I'd never really looked at her, had never inspected her. Maybe that's why she did the fortune, just to make sure I knew she existed. I shouldn't change too quickly. I threw open the doors. Didn't mean to rout you out. But I'm late.
Are you?
Sure. It's 9:00. She sauntered in. Her behind stuck out nice and round and bounced slowly.
one up and one down with each step. She was well enough stacked in front so she didn't have to emphasize them. They were there. Margie is what Joey Boy would call a dish, and my own son Alan, too, maybe. Perhaps I was seeing her for the first time. Her features regular, nose a little long, lips outlined fuller than they were, the lower particularly. Her hair dyed a rich chestnut brown that doesn't occur in nature, but pretty. Her chin was fragile and deep cut, but there was plenty of muscle in the cheeks and very wide cheekbones. Margie's eyes had had care. They were that hazel to blue to steel color that changes with the light. It was a durable face that had taken it and could take it, even violence, even punching. Her eyes flicked about, to me, to the groceries, and back to me. I imagined she was a very close observer, and a good rememberer, too.
"I hope you don't have the same problem as yesterday."
She laughed. "No, no. I don't get a drummer every day. This time I really ran out of coffee."
"Most people do."
"What do you mean?"
"Well, the first 10 people every morning ran out of coffee."
"Is that true?"
"Sure."
"Say, I want to thank you for sending your drummer in."
"It was his idea."
"But you did it."
"What kind of coffee?"
"Doesn't matter. I make lousy coffee no matter what kind I get."
"Do you measure?"
"Sure, and it's still lousy. Coffee just isn't..." I nearly said, "my cup of tea."
"You did say it.
Try this blend." I picked a can from the shelf, and as she reached to take it from me, just that little gesture, every part of her body moved, shifted, announced itself quietly. "I'm here, the leg. Me, the thigh. Not better than me, the soft belly. Everything was new, newly seen." I caught my breath. Mary says a woman can put out signals or not, just as she wishes. And if that's so, Margie had a communication system that ran from her pointed patent leather toe to her curving, soft chestnut hair.
"You seem to have gotten over your mully grubs."
"I had 'em bad yesterday. Don't know where they came from."
"Don't I know? Sometimes with me, it's not the usual reason."
"You did quite a job with that fortune."
"Sore about it?"
"No. I just like to know how you did it."
"You don't believe all that stuff."
"It's not belief. You hit some things right on the nose. Things I've been thinking, and things I've been doing."
"Like what?"
"Like it's time for a change."
"You think I rigged the cards, don't you?"
"Doesn't matter. If you did, what made you? Have you thought of that?"
She looked me full in the eyes, suspicious, probing, questioning.
"Yeah," she said softly. "I mean, no, I never thought of that. If I rigged them what made me, that would be like unrigging the rig."
Mr. Baker looked in the door.
"Morning, Margie," he said. "Ethan, have you given any thought to my suggestion?"
"I sure have, and I'd like to talk to you."
"Any time at all, Ethan."
"Well, I can't get out during the week. You know Marullo's hardly ever here. Going to be home tomorrow?"
"After church, sure. That's an idea. You bring Mary about 4. While the ladies jaw about Easter hats, we'll slip off, and I've got 100 things I want to ask. Guess I better write them down." "Anything I know, you're welcome to. See you then. Morning, Margie."
When he went out, Margie said,
"You're beginning fast."
"Maybe just limbering up."
"Say, know what would be interesting? How about if you turn the cards blindfolded or something to see how close they come to yesterday?"
"No," she said. "That wouldn't work."
"You kidding me, or do you really go for it?"
"Way I look at it, doesn't matter about believing. I don't believe in extrasensory perception, or lightning, or the hydrogen bomb,
or even violets or schools of fish, but I know they exist. I don't believe in ghosts, but I've seen them.
No, you're kidding.
I'm not.
You don't seem like the same man.
I'm not. Maybe nobody is, for long.
What caused it, Heath?
I don't know. Maybe I'm sick of being a grocery clerk.
It's about time.
Do you really like Mary?
Sure I do. Why would you ask that?
You just don't seem to be the same kind of... Well, you're so different from her.
I see what you mean, but I do like her.
I love her. So do I.
Lucky.
I know I am.
I meant her.
Well, I'll go make my lousy coffee. I'll think about that card deal. Sooner the better, before it cools.
She tapped out, her neat buttocks jumping like live rubber.
I'd never seen her before. I wonder how many people I've looked at all my life and never seen. It's scary to think about.
Point of reference again. When two people meet, each one is changed by the other, so you've got two new people.
Maybe that means... Hell, it's complicated.
I agreed with myself to think about such things at night when I couldn't sleep. Forgetting to open on time scared me. That's like dropping your handkerchief at the scene of a murder, or your glasses like those whatchacallums in Chicago.
What does that mean? What crime? What murder?
At noon I made 4 sandwiches, cheese and ham, and lettuce and mayonnaise. Ham and cheese, ham and cheese. When a man marries, he lives in the trees. I took 2 of the sandwiches and a bottle of Coke to the back door of the bank and handed them in to Joey Boy.
Find the mistake?
Not yet. You know, I'm so close to it, I'm blind. Why not lay off till Monday?
Can't. Banks are a screwy lot.
Sometimes if you don't think about something, it comes to you.
I know. Thanks for the sandwiches.
He looked inside to make sure there was lettuce and mayonnaise. Saturday afternoon before Easter in the grocery business is what my august and illiterate son would call for the birds. But 2 things did happen that proved to me at least that some deep-down underwater change was going on in me. I mean that yesterday, or any yesterday before that, I wouldn't have done what I did. It's like looking at wallpaper samples. I guess I'd unrolled a new pattern. The first thing was Marullo coming in. His arthritis was hurting him pretty bad. He kept flexing his arms like a weightlifter.
How it goes?
Slow, Alfio.
I had never called him by his first name before.
Nobody in town.
I like it better when you call me Kid.
I thought you don't like it.
I find I do, Alfio.
Everybody gone away.
His shoulders must have been burning as though there were hot sand in the joints.
How long ago did you come from Sicily?
47 years. Long time.
Ever been back?
No.
Why don't you go on a visit?
What for? Everything changed.
Don't you get curious about it?
Not much.
Any relatives alive?
Sure, my brother and his kids, and they got kids.
I think you'd want to see them.
He looked at me, I guess, as I had looked at Margie. Saw me for the first time.
What you got on your mind, kid?
Hurts me to see your arthritis. I thought how it's warm in Sicily might knock the pain out.
He looked at me suspiciously.
What's with you?
How do you mean?
You look different.
Oh, I got a little bit of good news.
Not going to quit?
Not right away. If you wanted to make a trip to Italy, I could promise I'd be here.
What's good news?
Can't tell you yet. It's like this. I balanced my palm back and forth.
Money?
Could be. Look, you're rich enough.
Why don't you go back to Sicily and show him what a rich American looks like? Soak up some sun. I can take care of the store. You know that.
You ain't quitting.
Hell no. You know me well enough to know I wouldn't run out on you.
You changed, kid.
Why? I told you. Go bounce the bambinos.
I don't belong there,
he said. But I knew I'd planted something. Really something. And I knew he'd come in late that night and go over the books. He's a suspicious bastard. He'd hardly left when... Well, it was like yesterday. The BBD&D drummer came in. Not on business, he said. I'm staying the weekend out at Montauk. Thought I'd drop in. I'm glad you did, I said. I want to give you this. I held out the billfold with the 20 sticking out.
Al, that's goodwill, I told you. I'm not on business.
Take it.
What are you getting at?
It constitutes a contract where I come from.
What's the matter? You sore?
Certainly not.
Then why?
Take it. The bids aren't all in.
Jesus! Did Wayland's make a better offer?
No.
Well, who then? Them damn discount houses?
I pushed the $20 bill into his breast pocket behind his peaked handkerchief. I'll keep the billfold, I said. It's nice.
Look, I can't make an offer without I talk to the head office. Don't close till maybe Tuesday. I'll telephone you. If I say it's Hugh, you'll know who it is.
It's your money in the payphone.
Well, hold it open, will you?
It's open, I said.
Doing any fishing?
Only for dames. I tried to take that dish Margie out there. She wouldn't go. Damn near snapped my head off. I don't get dames.
They're curiouser and curiouser.
You can say that again, he said. And I haven't heard that expression in 15 years. He looked worried.
Don't do anything till you hear from me, he said.
Jesus! I thought I was conning a country boy. I will not sell my master short.
Nuts! You just raised the ante.
I just refused a bribe, if you feel the urge to talk about it. I guess that proves I was different. The guy began to look at me with respect, and I liked it. I loved it. The bugger thought I was like him, only better at it. Just before I was ready to close up, Mary telephoned.
Ethan, she said. Now, don't get mad.
At what, flower feet?
Well, she's so lonely, and I thought... Well, I asked Margie to dinner.
Why not?
You're not mad?
Hell no.
Don't swear. Tomorrow's Easter.
That reminds me. Press your prettiest. We're going to Baker's at 4 o'clock.
At their house?
Yes, for tea.
I'll have to wear my Easter church outfit.
Good stuff, Fern Tip.
You're not mad about Margie?
I love you, I said. And I do. I really do. And I remember thinking what a hell of a man could become. Chapter 5. When I walked up Elm Street and turned in at the walk of buried ballast stones, I stopped and looked at the old place. It felt different. It felt mine. Not Mary's, not Father's, not old Captain's, but mine. I could sell it, or burn it, or keep it. I'd taken only 2 of the back steps when the screen door whapped open and Alan boiled out yelling, "Where's the Peaks? Did you bring me the Peaks?"
"No," I said.
And, wonder layered with wonders, he didn't scream his pain and loss. He didn't appeal to his mother to agree that I had promised. He said, "Oh," and went quietly away.
"Good evening," I said to his retreating back, and he stopped and said,
"Good evening," as though it were a foreign word he'd just learned. Mary came into the kitchen.
"You've got a haircut," she said.
She identifies any strangeness in me as a fever or a haircut.
"No, Pin Curl, I have not."
Well, I've been going like spit to get the house ready.
Ready?
I told you, Margie's coming for dinner.
I know, but why all the festive hurly-burly?
We haven't had a dinner kissed in ages.
That's true. That's really true.
Are you going to put on your dark suit?
No, old Dobbins, my decent gray.
Why not the dark?
Don't want to spoil the press for church tomorrow.
I can press it tomorrow morning.
I'll wear old Dobbin. As sweet a suit as you'll find in the county.
Children, she called, don't you touch anything. I put out the nut dishes. You don't want to wear the dark?
No.
Margie will be dressed to the nines.
Margie likes old Dobbin.
How do you know?
She told me.
She did not.
Wrote a letter to the paper about it.
Be serious. You are going to be nice to her.
I'm going to make love to her.
I think you'd like to wear the dark, with her coming.
Look, flower girl, when I came in, I didn't give a damn what I wore, or nothing. In 2 short moments, you've made it impossible for me to wear anything but old Dobbin.
Just to be mean?
Sure.
Oh,
she said in the same tone Alan had used. What's for dinner? I want to wear a tie to match the meat.
Roast chicken. Can't you smell it?
I guess I can. Mary, I... But I didn't go on.
Why do it?
You can't buck a national instinct. She'd been to the chicken bargain day at the Safe-Rite store. Cheaper than Marullo's. Of course, I got them wholesale, and I'd have to explain to Mary the come-on-bargains at the chain stores. The bargain draws you in, and you pick up a dozen other things that aren't bargains, just because they're under your hand. Everyone knows it, and everyone does it.
My lecture to Mary Manyflowers died a-foaling. The new Ethan Allen Hawley goes along with the national follies, and uses them when he can.
Mary said, I hope you don't think I was disloyal.
My darling, what can be virtuous or sinful about a chicken?
It was awfully cheap.
I think you did the wise, the wifely thing.
You're making fun.
Alan was in my bedroom waiting for me.
Can I look at your Knight Templar sword?
Sure. It's in the corner of the closet. He knew perfectly well where it was. While I skinned off my clothes, he got it out of the leather case and unsheathed it and held the shiny plated blade up in the light and looked at his noble posture in the mirror. How's the essay going?
Huh?
Don't you mean, I beg your pardon, sir?
Yes, sir.
I said, how's the essay?
Oh, fine.
You going to do it?
Sure.
Sure?
Sure, sir.
You can look at that hat, too. In that big leather case on the shelf. Feathers kind of yellowy. I got in the big, old, wide-bottomed tub with the lion's feet. They made them big enough to luxuriate in those days. I scrubbed Marullo and the whole day off my skin with a brush, and I shaved in the tub without looking, feeling for the whiskers with my fingertips. Everyone would agree that's pretty Roman and decadent. While I combed my hair, I looked in the mirror. I hadn't seen my face in a long time. It's quite possible to shave every day and never really see your face, particularly if you don't care much for it. Beauty is only skin deep, and also beauty must come from inside. It better be the second if I was to get anywhere. It isn't that I have an ugly face. To me, it just isn't interesting. I made a few expressions and gave it up. They weren't noble or menacing or proud or funny. It was just the same damn face making faces. When I came back to the bedroom, Alan had the plumed Knight Templar hat on, and if it makes me look that silly, I must resign. The leather hat box was open on the floor. It has a support made of velvet-covered cardboard, like an upside-down porridge bowl. I wonder if they can bleach that ostrich plume, or do I have to get a new one?
If you get a new one, can I have this?
Why not? Where's Ellen? I haven't heard her young, screechy voice.
She's writing on her I Love America essay.
And you?
I'm thinking about it. Will you bring some peaks home?
I'll probably forget it. Why don't you drop in at the store and pick it up someday?
Okay. Mind if I ask something, sir?
I'd be flattered.
Did we used to own all High Street for 2 blocks?
We did.
And did we have whaling ships?
Yep.
Well, why don't we now?
We lost them.
How come?
Just up and lost them.
That's a joke.
It's a pretty darn serious joke, if you dissect it.
We're dissecting a frog at school.
Good for you. Not so good for the frog.
Which of these beauty ties shall I wear?
The blue one, he said without interest.
Say, when you get dressed, can you... Have you got time to come up in the attic?
I'll make time if it's important.
Will you come?
I will.
All right, I'll go up now and turn on the light.
Be with you in a couple of tie-tying moments.
His footsteps sounded hollowly on the uncarpeted attic stairs.
If I think about it while I tie a bow, the tie has a rotating tendency. But if I let my fingers take their own way, they do it perfectly.
I commissioned my fingers and thought about the attic of the old Hawley house, my attic.
It was not a dark and spidery prison for the broken and the abandoned. It has windows with small panes so old that the light comes through lavender, and the outside is wavery, like a world seen through water. The books stored there are not waiting to be thrown out or given to the Siemens Institute. They sit comfortably on their shelves waiting to be rediscovered. And the chairs, some unfashionable for a time, some rump-sprung, are large and soft. It is not a dusty place either. House cleaning is attic cleaning also, and since it is mostly closed away, dust does not enter. I remember as a child scrambling among the brilliance of books, or battered with agonies, or in the spectral half-life that requires loneliness, retiring to the attic to lie curled in a great body-molded chair with the violet-lavender light from the window. There I could study the big ad-squared beams that support the roof, see how they are mortised one into another, and pinned in place with oaken dowels. When it rains, from rustling drip to roar on the roof, it is a fine, secure place. Then the books, tinted with light, the picture books of children grown, seated and gone. Chatterboxes and the Rollo series. 1,000 Acts of God, fire, flood, tidal waves, earthquakes, all fully illustrated. The Gustave Doré hell, with Dante's squared cantos like bricks between. And the heartbreaking stories of Hans Christian Andersen, the blood-chilling violence and cruelty of the Grimm brothers, the Mort d'Arthur of Majesty with drawings by Aubrey Beardsley, a sickly, warped creature, a strange choice to illustrate great, manly Mallory. I remember thinking how wise a man was H.C. Andersen. The king told his secrets down a well, and his secrets were safe. A man who tells secrets or stories must think of who is hearing or reading, for a story has as many versions as it has readers. Everyone takes what he wants or can from it, and thus changes it to his measure. Some pick out parts and reject the rest. Some strain the story through their mesh of prejudice. Some paint it with their own delight. A story must have some points of contact with the reader to make him feel at home in it. Only then can he accept wonders. The tale I may tell to Alan must be differently built from the same tale told to my Mary, and that in turn shaped to fit Marullo, if Marullo is to join it. But perhaps the well of Jose Andersen is best. It only receives, and the echo it gives back is quiet and soon over. I guess we're all, or most of us, the wards of that 19th-century science which denied existence to anything it could not measure or explain.
The things we couldn't explain went right on, but surely not with our blessing. We did not see what we couldn't explain. And meanwhile, a great part of the world was abandoned to children, insane people, fools and mystics, who were more interested in what is than in why it is. So many old and lovely things are stored in the world's attic because we don't want them around us,
and we don't dare throw them out.
A single unshaded light hung from a roof beam. The attic is floored with hand-hewn pine planks 20 inches wide and 2 inches thick, ample support for the neat stacks of trunks and boxes, of paper-wrapped lamps and vases and all manner of exiled finery. And the light glowed softly on the generations of books in open bookcases, all clean and dustless. My Mary is a stern and uncompromising dust harrier, and she is neat as a top sergeant. The books are arranged by size and color. Alan rested his forehead on the top of a bookcase and glared down at the books. His right hand was on the pommel of the Knight Templar sword, point downward like a cane. "You make a symbolic picture, my son. Call it Youth, War, and Learning." "I want to ask you, you said there was books to look up stuff."
"What kind of stuff?"
"Patriotic jazz for the essay."
"I see. Patriotic jazz. How's this for a beat? Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death."
"Great! That's the berries."
"Sure is. There were giants on the earth in those days."
"I wished I lived then. Pirate ships. Oh, boy! Bang, bang! Strike your colors. Pots of gold and ladies in silk dresses and jewels. I sure wished I lived then. Some of our folks did it. You said so yourself."
"Kind of genteel piracy. They called them privateers. I guess it wasn't as sweet as it sounds from a distance. Salt, beef, and biscuit. There was scurvy on the earth in those days, too."
"I wouldn't mind that. I'd get the gold and bring it home. I guess they don't let you do it anymore."
"No. It's bigger and better organized now. They call it diplomacy."
"There's a boy in our school that won 2 television prizes, $50 and $200. How's that?"
"He must be smart."
"Him? Of course not. It's a trick, he says. You gotta learn the trick, then you get a gimmick."
"Gimmick?"
"Sure. Like you're a cripple, or you support your old mother raising frogs. That gives your audience interest, so they choose you. He's got a magazine with every contest in the whole country in it. Can I get one of those magazines, Pop?"
"Well, piracy's out, but I guess the impulse lingers."
"How do you mean?"
"Something for nothing. Wealth without effort."
"Can I get that magazine?"
"I thought such things were in disrepute since the payola scandals."
"Hell no. I mean, no, sir. They just change it around a little. I'd sure like to cut in on some of that loot."
"It is loot, isn't it?"
"It's all dough, no matter how you get it."
"I don't believe that. It doesn't hurt the money to get it that way, but it hurts the one who gets it."
"I don't see how. It's not against the law. Why, some of the biggest people in this country..."
"Charles, my son, my son."
"How do you mean, Charles?"
"Do you have to be rich, Alan? Do you have to?
Do you think I like to live without no motorbike? Must be 20 kids with motorbikes. And how do you think it is for your family, hasn't even got a car, leave alone no television?"
"I'm deeply shocked."
"You don't know how it is, Dad. One day in class, I did a theme how my great-granddad was a whaling captain."
"He was."
"Whole class bust out laughing. Know what they call me? Whaley. How'd you like that?"
"Pretty bad."
"Wouldn't be so bad if you were a lawyer or in a banker like that. Know what I'm going to do with the first chunk of loot I win?"
No, what?
I'm going to buy you an automobile so you won't feel so lousy when other people all got one.
I said, thank you, Alan. My throat was dry.
Oh, that's all right. I can't get a license yet anyway.
You'll find all the great speeches of our nation in that case, Alan. I hope you'll read some of them.
I will. I need to.
You surely do. Good hunting. I went quietly down the stairs and moistened my lips as I went. And Alan was right. I felt lousy. When I sat down in my big chair under the reading light, Mary brought the paper to me.
What a comfort you are, Wiggles.
That suit looks real nice.
You're a good loser and a good cook.
The tie matches your eyes.
You're up to something, I can tell. I'll trade you a secret for a secret.
But I don't have one, she said.
Make one up.
I can't. Come on, Ethan. Tell me.
Any eerie children listening in?
No.
Well, Margie Young Hunt came in today, out of coffee, so she said. I think she's carrying a torch for me.
Come on, tell.
Well, we were talking about the fortune, and I said it would be interesting to do it again and see if it was the same.
You didn't.
I did so, and she said it would be interesting.
But you don't like things like that.
I do when they're good.
Think she'll do it tonight?
If you care to offer me a penny for my thoughts, I think that's why she's coming.
Oh, no! I asked her.
After she set you up for it.
You don't like her.
On the contrary, I'm beginning to like her very much, and to respect her.
I wish I could tell when you're joking.
Ellen came in then quietly, so you couldn't tell whether she had been listening, but I suspect she had. Ellen is a girl, and 13 to boot, sweet and sad, gay and delicate, sickly when she needs it. She's in that stage like dough beginning to set. She may be pretty or not. She is a leaner, leans on me. Breathes on me, too, but her breath is sweet like a cow's breath. She's a toucher, too. Ellen leaned on the arm of my chair, and her thin little shoulder touched mine. She ran one pink finger down my coat sleeve and onto the hairs on my wrist, and it tickled. The blonde hairs on her arm shone like gold dust under the lamp. A devious one, she is. But then I guess all girls are.
Nail polish, I said.
Mama lets me if it's only pink. Your nails are rough.
Aren't they?
But they're clean.
I scrubbed them.
I hate dirty nails like Alan's.
Maybe you just hate Alan, lock, stock, and bobtail.
I do.
Good for you. Why don't you kill him?
You're silly.
She crawled her fingers behind my ear. She's probably making some boy kids very nervous already. I hear you're working on your essay.
Stinker told you.
Is it good?
Oh, yes. Very good. I'll let you read it when it's done.
Honored. I see your dress for the occasion.
This old thing? I'm saving my new dress for tomorrow.
Good idea. There'll be boys.
I hate boys. I do hate boys.
I know you do. Hostility is your motto. I don't like them much myself. Now lean off me a minute. I want to read the paper.
She flounced like a 1920s movie star and instantly took her revenge.
When are you going to be rich?
Yes. She'll give some man a bad time. My instinct was to grab her and paddle her, but that's exactly what she wanted. I do believe she had eyeshadow on. There was as little pity in her eyes as you'll find in a panther's eyes.
Next Friday, I said.
Well, I wish you'd hurry up. I'm sick of being poor.
And she slipped quickly out.
a listener at doors, too. I do love her, and that's odd because she is everything I detest in anyone else. And I adore her. No newspaper for me. I hadn't even unfolded it when Margie Young Hunt arrived. She was done up, hairdresser done up. I guess Mary would know how it's done, but I don't. In the morning, the out-of-coffee Margie was set for me like a bear trap. The same evening, she drew a bead on Mary. If her behind bounced, I couldn't see it. If anything was under her neat suit, it was hiding. She was a perfect guest, for another woman, helpful, charming, complimentary, thoughtful, modest. She treated me as though I'd taken on 40 years since the morning. What a wonderful thing a woman is. I could admire what they do, even if I don't understand why. While Margie and Mary went through their pleasant litany, "What have you done with your hair? I like it. That's your color. You should always wear it." The harmless recognition signals of women. I thought of the most feminine story I ever heard. Two women meet. One cries, "What have you done with your hair? It looks like a wig." "It is a wig." "Well, you'd never know it." Maybe these are deeper responses than we know, or have any right to know. Dinner was a series of exclamations about the excellence of the roast chicken, and denials that it was edible. Ellen studied our guest with a recording eye, every detail of hairdress and makeup. And I knew then how young they start the minute examination on which they base what is called their intuition. Ellen avoided my eyes. She knew she had shot to kill, and she expected revenge. "Very well, my savage daughter. I shall revenge myself in the cruelest way you can imagine. I shall forget it." And it was a good dinner, over-rich and too much of it, as company dinners must be, and a mountain of dishes not ordinarily used, and coffee afterward, which we do not ordinarily have. "Doesn't it keep you awake?" "Nothing keeps me awake." "Not even me?" "Ethan!" Then the silent, deadly war of the dishes. "Let me help." "Not at all. You're the guest." "Well, let me carry them, then." Mary's eyes sought out the children, and her spirit moved on them with a fixed bayonet. They knew what was coming, but they were helpless. Mary said, "The children always do it. They love to. And they do it so well. I'm proud of them." "Well, isn't that nice? You don't see that much anymore." "I know. We feel very fortunate that they want to help." I could read their ferrety little minds, looking for an escape, thinking of making a fuss, getting sick, dropping the beautiful old dishes. Mary must have read their evil little minds also. She said, "The remarkable thing is that they never break anything, don't even chip a glass." "Well, you are blessed," Margie said. "How did you teach them?" "I didn't. It's just natural with them. You know, some people are just naturally clumsy. Well, Alan and Ellen are just naturally clever with their hands." I glanced at the kids to see how they were handling it. They knew they were being taken. I think they wondered whether Margie Young Hunt knew it. They were still looking for an escape. I dropped the beam full on them. "Of course they like to hear compliments," I said, "but we're holding them up. They'll miss the movie if we don't let them get to it." Margie had the grace not to laugh, and Mary gave me a quick and startled look of admiration. They hadn't even asked to go to the movie. Even if teenage children aren't making a sound, it's quieter when they're gone. They put a boiling in the air around them. As they left, the whole house seemed to sigh and settle. No wonder poltergeists infest only houses with adolescent children. The three of us circled warily around the subject each one knew was coming. I went to the glass-fronted cabinet and took out three long-stemmed, lily-shaped glasses, cotton twist, brought home from England heaven knows how long ago, and I poured from a basket-covered gallon jug, dark and discolored with age. "Jamaica rum," I said.
Hawleys were seamen.
"Must be very old," said Margie Young Hunt.
"Older than you or me or my father."
"It'll take the top of your head off," Mary said. "Well, this must be a party. Ethan only gets it out for weddings and funerals. Do you think it's all right, dear? Just before Easter, I mean?"
"The sacrament isn't Coca-Cola, my darling."
"Mary, I've never seen your husband so gay."
"It's the fortune you read," said Mary. "It's changed him overnight."
What a frightening thing is the human. A mass of gauges and dials and registers, and we can read only a few, and those perhaps not accurately. A flare of searing red pain formed in my bowels, and moved upward until it speared and tore at the place just under my ribs. A great wind roared in my ears and drove me like a helpless ship, dismasted before it could shorten sail. I tasted bitter salt, and I saw a pulsing, heaving room. Every warning signal screamed danger, screamed havoc, screamed shock. It caught me as I passed behind my lady's chairs, and doubled me over in quaking agony, and just as suddenly it was gone. I straightened up and moved on, and they didn't even know it had happened. I understand how people once believed the devil could take possession. I'm not sure I don't believe it. Possession. The seething birth of something foreign with every nerve resisting and losing the fight, and settling back beaten to make peace with the invader. Violation. That's the word, if you can think of the sound of a word edged with blue flame like a blowtorch. My dear's voice came through. "It doesn't really harm to hear nice things," she said. I tried my voice, and it was strong and good. "A little hope, even hopeless hope, never hurt anybody," I said, and I put the jug away in its cabinet and went back to my chair and drank half the glass of ancient, fragrant rum and sat down and crossed my knees and locked my fingers in my lap.
"I don't understand him," Mary said. "He's always hated fortune-telling, made jokes about it. I just don't understand."
My nerve ends were rustling like dry, wind-blown winter grass, and my laced fingers had whitened from pressure. "I'll try to explain it to Mrs. Young, to Margie," I said. "Mary comes from a noble but poor Irish family."
"We weren't all that poor."
"Can't you hear it in her speech?"
"Well, now that you mention it."
"Well, Mary's sainted, or should be. Grandmother was a good Christian, wasn't she, Mary?" It seemed to me a little hostility was growing in my dear. I went on. "But she had no trouble believing in fairy people, although in strict, unbending Christian theology, the two don't mix."
"But that's different."
"Of course it is, darling. Nearly everything's different. Can you disbelieve in something you don't know about?"
"Look out for him," Mary said. "He'll catch you in a word trap."
"I will not. I don't know about fortunes or fortune-telling. How can I not believe in it? I believe it exists because it happens."
"But you don't believe it's true."
"What's true is that people get it done, millions of them, and pay for it. That's enough to know to be interested, isn't it?"
"But you don't..."
"Wait. It isn't that I don't believe, but that I don't know. They're not the same thing. I don't know which comes first, the fortune or the fortune-telling."
"I think I know what he means."
"You do?" Mary was not pleased.
"Suppose the fortune-teller was sensitive to things that are going to happen anyway. Is that what you mean?" "That's different. But how can cards know?"
I said, "The cards can't even move without someone turning them." Margie did not look at me, but I knew she sensed Mary's growing unease, and she wanted instructions. "Couldn't we work out a test?" I asked.
"Well, that's a funny thing. These things seem to resent a test and go away, but there's no harm trying. Can you think of a test?"
"You haven't touched your rum."
They lifted their glasses together and sipped and put them down. I finished mine and got out the bottle.